Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey EU Startups, if you're running a startup like me, you have more than enough on your plate. So when a prospect asks if your company is ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliant, you're probably thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? We don't have the time, we don't have the manpower, and we definitely don't have the know-how. That's where Sitel comes in. With our automated platform and in-house expert to manage the entire process for you, you'll get compliant super fast. Compliance has never been easier.
So if you need help with compliance, visit sitale.ai/EU startups. That's sitale.ai/EU startups for $1,000 off your first framework.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My next guest is Jean-Charles Samuelian, co-founder and CEO of Allen. Allen is on a mission to help people live in good health to 100 years old and has raised more than 490 million euros to do that. Before establishing Allen, Jean-Charles co-founded Explicit, a company known for its lightweight aircraft seats, and Mistral AI, a venture in artificial intelligence. Jean-Charles, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time. Welcome.
Thank you. Really happy to be there. Thank you, Martin.
Amazing. So, Jean-Charles, let's just dive right into it. You know, you've built a rocket-light airplane seat, then you reimagined the health insurance system, and then co-founded one of Europe's hottest AI startups. What exactly are you having for breakfast, and is it clinically approved?
My answer is going to be very boring because I don't really do breakfast, but it's I feel it's, you know, in life when you're driven by having an impact on society and trying to achieve meaningful things, and when you're frustrated sometimes by how the world runs and how some stuff are not working, you just try to solve it with your capabilities and to build a group of people around you to solve it. And I think the mission that is the dearest to my heart is healthcare and making prevention the new norm for everyone. It's been a dream since like forever, coming from a family of doctors. And so that's what we are trying to do with Allen, and it's make healthcare a lot more accessible, affordable, a lot more engaging, fun to engage with, and to make sure that as a result, everyone can live in better health, that can also be the best investment a company can make, investing in the healthcare of their employees. So we built a health insurance company and we built a lot of services for healthcare and prevention, and access to care, and a digital clinic. And like seeing more than 700,000 people benefiting from what we do is something that makes us proud. And I think that's the energy that makes you, that makes me wake up every morning, I would say.
Yeah. That's amazing. And that's, I want to say that it's really close to, like, health generally is very close topic to my heart because as we were, as I was telling you before about my wife, she's actually, she works for AstraZeneca, and she's like a senior director in oncology department. She has, yeah, she's working on clinical trials end to end from the business side, and I know how important it is, like kind of firsthand from her, to the prevention, that not to like, you know, react later and like do all it, like, but of course, like they're working on drugs like every day and put all their research and efforts into it to kind of eliminate cancer as a cause of death, but prevention and like how or early detection is just it's just a game changer. So so thank you for doing that, and thank you for empowering so many people to kind of change their way of thinking and the way of life, because it's so important. Jean-Charles, jumping from airspace to healthcare isn't exactly a textbook move, right? What was the moment you knew you wanted to reinvent one of the most complex industries out there?
I think I kind of always knew, and I would say even before creating our aircraft seat company, I knew I wanted to create a company in healthcare. Mm-hmm. It just felt Explicit at the time was a project with two friends that seemed really fun to build and really impactful. But at one point, one of my grandfather got diagnosed with lung cancer, and it felt that not spending time on trying to solve access to care was a mistake, and I would regret it down the line. And so I became obsessed with it. But you know, there are a lot of differences, but there are also some similarities. They are industries that are very regulated, and so you need to understand regulation to make a differentiation. And I think you need to connect the level of constraint that you have with the potential of innovation. And I feel that it's a great place to start a company and start a business where you have high barriers to entries that make it feel that the market and the solutions for consumer or for citizen have not evolved at the pace they should have evolved, and they have evolved in other industries. Yeah. And it really felt like it in aerospace, but even more so in healthcare, where like both the insurance experience, the way to purchase, the way to be reimbursed, the way to manage your claims as an individual, but also as a company selecting it for your employees, but also the way to approach prevention or to approach healthcare was antiquated, and we felt that we could do something very different while understanding very deeply the regulation. And the regulation in different countries, what is really hard with healthcare is that every country is different, even if the jobs to be done for people is the same. Like, we all need, wherever we live, better access to care, better investment in our prevention. And so we tried to build a global player. We operate now in four countries: France, Spain, Belgium, and Canada. And again, the similarities are building a very complex business in a complex industry and trying to scale it is really, really fascinating.
True, true, 100% true. Alan's origin story, though, you know, sounds like a wild bet. Take us back. What was the most like irrational part of starting Alan that somehow turned out to be totally right?
I think there were a few that people gave us advice not to do, and we decided to go against. The first one was a lot of people gave us the advice not to build the full stack insurance ourselves, like say, oh, managing an insurance is regulated, it's very hard, you should not do it, just be a broker, it's where the money is. And that's where you should do. And we decided to do everything. So we built the insurance company, we manage the risk, we price our own product, we build also the full verticalized reimbursement engine to reimburse when people go to the doctor or to the hospital and so on. That allows us to innovate a lot and to make a significantly and orders of magnitude better experience for our members and customers. But it was really non-obvious to go that vertical. And when we started doing an insurance, also everybody told us, yes, but you cannot go direct. In every country, like, insurance is intermediated. You have people that are paid to distribute insurance. You cannot sell it directly to companies. That's not going to work. And here we are. We only go direct for the last 9 years, and we cover 33,000 companies, from small ones to 65,000 employee companies in four countries in every industry. Of course, tech, but also hotel and restaurants, industrial companies, retail, fast food, services company, like you name it, every industry, even agriculture industry companies. And so I think proving that you can control your distribution and you can control your full value chain were kind of very atypical assumptions in our industry. And we decided to make it. Then a lot of people challenge us on, yes, but you are already doing all that. You should not build the healthcare services. Why building your digital clinic? while building your mental health servicing or your back pain and MSK reduction services, or while building like an optic shop where you can test your glasses online and get them delivered. And I think, again, we went against the advice by trying to integrate the full value chain. So you have a significantly better experience, a significantly better product for your member and customer. You generate more value for them. Mm-hmm. And I think we are kind of pretty, pretty opinionated on what should happen. And right now it worked. Same for international. Everybody was telling us, you have no healthcare and health insurance companies that have scale across countries with the same global platform. And we just are doing it.
Mm. Jean-Charles, this is sounding delightful. Health insurance isn't exactly known for delighting people, though. What were some of the craziest assumptions you had to break to make Alan feel human, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of attention to the details. And I think it's a lot of empathy for your members and your customers. Mm-hmm. Being your own member yourself, I spent still some time every day on Figma and on our designs with the team. And I don't think a lot of people in my industry do that. And I think that obsession, that mania for your members and your customers, on every decision you make and every little detail, every word, every pixel, every animation, every flow in terms of the user experience, and not being afraid of rebuilding everything to make that happen and not depending on outside software and so on, I think is what makes us very strong at delivering, again, that seamless experience. And so when you can switch from insurance to talking to a doctor, to talking to our AI assistant, to doing an online program that use the best traditions and the best methodology from therapy to reduce your anxiety, everything in one place, integrated with each other, with a lot of attention on where the data flow and how it worked, it starts making the experience magical. And that's why we have a net promoter score of 70 and that we are growing like 50% year on year. But it's not one thing, you know, it's like the sum of thousands of little things you add together in building your internal tools. And it's a tool, it's like what you provide as a tool, like as a platform, as an app, as a service for your member and your customer. But it's also the tools you provide for your team. We spent a lot of investment on the tool to price a new insurance product, a lot of investment on the tool to do customer service and our internal CRM for our customers. And when you start building all those things, that's where it compounds a few percent every day and you make a product that diverges from the rest of the market, I would say.
100%. 100%. I wanted to talk again about prevention for a second. You know, making prevention the default sounds great. Until you remember humans love croissants more than checkups, right? Yeah. What was the hardest part of changing behavior?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And when you look at the science of behavioral change, you need to remember that we grew up in a... Like the world we are living today is very different from most of the history of humanity. Yeah. And if you just close your eyes and imagine you're like a prehistoric human, like your day was about surviving. Like every single decision you made was to put food on the table. You didn't have a table and not to be eaten by something, more or less. Yeah. And so you had a very short feedback loop on, I make an action, I have a direct reward based on that action, or a direct negative reward. And today we switched to a society where you take actions today for a long-term impact. And meaning that you're going to put money in your bank account for your retirement. You're going to invest in the education of your kids to make them good adults 15 years from now. Mm-hmm. And when you do sport or when you eat healthy, it's not going to affect you today. It's going to affect you over the long term. But our brain is still the same than in many ways than in the prehistoric ages. And so we have been engineered to focus on the short-term dopamine. And that's why it's 11 p.m. and we are going to watch that extra Netflix episode. Even if we know it's bad for us, the dopamine is too strong. And so we spent a lot of time, and we just released this week officially what we call Alan Play to build the engagement engine around healthcare and prevention. And so we use the best techniques from behavioral science and gamification to help people act daily on their prevention. And we use streaks, we use levels, we use community challenges. You can challenge your coworkers, you can challenge your family. You have a lot of tailored exercise every day that is based on you, that are personalized, and it worked. Like, we have 18% of daily active users on the latest course when we have activated Alan Play, which is unseen in our industry. We have people that walk 20,000 more steps a month thanks to us, and it has a reduction of 15 to 20% on cardiovascular risk and on diabetes. And so we put a lot of attention to make healthcare and prevention so fun and playful that you can be serious about it. And that means, again, building a lot of things around gamification of prevention.
This is amazing. I love it. I love the impact. Like, it's, I just wanted to say for the record that just yesterday I broke the habit of watching this, like boosting the dopamine and watching something at 11 p.m., which is not that good for me. I went to sleep with my daughter just at 9 p.m. and slept until 8 a.m., which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
Like, how many hours did I sleep? I don't even know. Like, when I woke up, I was feeling like a newborn. Maybe not entirely, but Jean-Charles, Alan is now in France, Spain, Belgium, Canada. How do you adapt a single mission to countries with very different healthcare systems, cultures, and, you know, user expectations?
So one of the interesting aspects of it is, whatever the country, people are the same in many, many ways. We share a lot more similarities than differences, and I hope the world will remember that a little bit more. But, and so, again, I think the underlying problems you need to solve are the same, which is navigating the healthcare system that is super complex and with a lot of inequalities of access depending on where you are in your country, the level of information and education you have. That's one. The second one is how to invest in prevention, because, again, a lot of people don't have access, don't know what to do, and have many alternatives that are not good for them and that don't optimize for the right thing. And the last one is that we've seen a huge increase in terms of inflation, in terms of cost of medical care in the past 15 years, and accelerated since COVID. And so how do you fight that by making the healthcare system smarter, bringing digital alternatives. And so, yes, there are differences. So when we enter a new country, we need to understand the regulatory framework, how to connect with the hospital or clinic network and the providers. And we need to build a new kind of insurance product that is adapted to the needs of people and companies. But what we have done is know that our app is mostly entirely globalized. The healthcare services are the same because people have the same needs. Yeah. And so we feel, and we spent a lot, it's been years of investment to get there, but we are finally at a point where, and it will be finished this year, but where we have a global platform that allows us to launch new countries a lot faster, and focusing on all the similarities and building tools and building blocks that can adapt very quickly to the differences between countries. But it also means it's not a standard model. Like, when we launch a country, we spend significant resources on the ground. We have a local general manager that has, there is local product, local go-to-market, mm-hmm. operations, mm-hmm. customer service. So it's a meaningful investment in the country.
Awesome. Jean-Charles, what do you think healthcare will look like in 20 years? Are we talking personal health, co-pilots, longevity clinics, or just, you know, fewer PDFs and more peace of mind?
That's a really good question. And predicting the future 20 years from now is close to impossible, I think.
Hard, huh? Especially how fast everything's changing.
Yeah, health, and when you see indeed what is happening with AI, what is happening with robotics, I think it's going to change a lot. But I think the underlying trends that are not going to change are people wanting more ownership of their health and trying to understand it a lot more, having more control. And we came from a place where we had people, health professionals were telling us what to do, to people coming a lot more educated, having search information and trying to take control of their destiny, using more and more data and specification to do that, testing more and more. And I think losing the cost of testing is going to decrease over time, and that's going to be an investment. I do think, and I kind of like that metaphor, but if you look at navigating the world, in the past, in the analog time, you were opening your map, paper map, like maybe 3 times a year when you were traveling in your car, and now you're opening your map on your phone several times a day. I think healthcare was the same thing. It was very analog. You looked at your map at best a couple of times a year. And thanks to technology, I think you are going to have a lot more continuous relationship with health. Having, of course, an AI companion in your pocket that we are building, that is proactive, that helps you navigate the healthcare system, that is going to remove some of the burden on health professionals, on emergency rooms to make it more efficient, but to give more time for them to practice. They are going to have assistants to be more efficient. We are going to be better at personalization of care, personalization of treatment. We are going to understand even more what is the impact of nutrition, of sleep on our health, even if we start to have good bases. And so we are going to see an acceleration of science, an acceleration of the understanding of behavioral trends in healthcare, an acceleration of AI and robotics to help us solve a lot of the problem in terms of access and equality of care, and empower doctors and health professionals to do a lot more. So when and what is going to happen when, I don't know. But what I know is that we are at a time of transformation, which is a massive opportunity in a world that is not getting healthier. Like, again, when you look at the shape of chronic disease, when you look at, we are expanding slowly life expectancy, even if it has been stagnating a little bit. But the percentage that we spend in really good health doesn't increase that much. And so how do we push those boundaries of living longer, healthier in a meaningful way? I do think that you have some extreme longevity people at the edge, but I do think we need to push a world where it's not longevity for the sake of longevity.
Yeah.
It's longevity for the joy of life, and making sure that we optimize for more happiness, for more joy, for not trying just to extend life, but just how can I also can make today and tomorrow better, and how can I be happier in that? And I think that the way I would love to help shaping the healthcare of everyone.
I love it. I couldn't agree more. I would love to. There's so many things that come to my mind right now after what you just said. But let's maybe, I'm going to talk to you about it later after this podcast. But let's get a bit more maybe personal for the kind of second part of the podcast. What's one health related wake up call, if there were any, you know, personal or professional for you that changed how you live or lead?
Oh, I think there are so many, but I think there are some around, like, on mental health, something about trying to have an appreciative approach of life, and how can you reinforce your behaviors around like positive journaling every day that you share to your team as well. I think it's personal and professional, but that makes you see the life in a way where you know what to appreciate and you focus on what is already amazing and how to consolidate that and not on only the negative. I think for me, understanding the impact of alcohol on my sleep was really life-changing and reducing significantly and going not to absolute zero, but very close to zero.
Yeah.
I've been absolute zero for a while, but I think, again, in combining joy and longevity, I think finding the right balance of like once or a couple of times a month is fine. I think, of course, on like activity, on more mindfulness, I think it's really important. Mm-hmm. And then there is a more deep research when you start understanding how addiction works, how mental health is working, how mental health is combined to inflammation. And so depression is combined to inflammation, and how you can fight inflammation in your body, I think is super interesting. Like when you go and discuss about early testing, as you were discussing, a lot of things that are really fascinating and I keep discovering every day. But at the end of the day, it's how do you build your life around making it easier to walk a bit more every day? How can you invest in good sleep? How can you take care about your kid? How can you still enjoy what you eat and food and have some excess sometimes, but find the nutrition that works for you? All those things are really fascinating.
It is fascinating. I think sleep is everything. Yeah. Like sleep is magic. Like we kind of, like when we are born, we, like there's a saying which goes like, sleep like a baby, which is kind of a lie because babies are oftentimes basically allergic to sleep when they are born. But then actually once they learn how to connect the sleep cycles, they actually do sleep like a baby and they can sleep like, I don't know, my daughter goes to sleep, let's say at, 8 p.m. and wakes up at 8 a.m. Like it's 12 hours of sleep. It's amazing. And
you're lucky.
Lucky, right? And then we are like, I know, we like adults, what do? Like probably like if you're a founder and you're building something big, you don't get much sleep because you're just obsessed with what you're doing and you want to execute on it. And there's constantly something going on in your mind or in your company or in your life, whatever. But just sleep is magic. If you don't sleep, your DNA is not regenerating. Sleep cures a lot. Sleep can cure a lot. So I was just wondering, actually, with Alan and Mistral both in motion, how do you personally avoid burnout? Like, or is burnout just your cardio now?
I think that burnout is usually not only linked, like intensity can play a part of it, but I think it's a lot more linked to how you're surrounded by your human relationships and by a feeling of like failure or success in situation. And I think accumulating a feeling of failure and not being able to achieve what you want is what can lead to burnout. And of course, then sleep, and when everything goes wrong, everything gets worse. But, and so in my case, I think there are a few things. First is doing only things I love with people I truly respect. Like I feel that the people of Alan are among the smartest on earth. And so I feel very lucky every morning to wake up and to work with them. The leadership at Mistral is just fantastic. Arthur, Timothy and Guillaume are incredible people. And so I feel lucky just to work alongside with them and supporting them in their journey. So that's one of the things. The second thing is being intentional. I have like three young kids who are like all under five. And
they're all under five, you said?
Yeah, like five, three, and one. And
that's amazing.
It's fantastic.
But sounds like so much fun.
It's a lot of fun, some organization. But I think it's being intentional, like finding really meaningful time with them and organizing yourself about it. And I, again, I, I feel like I work very intensely, and I love working. I love being with my family as well. But one of the things that I truly believe in is to not burn out is a few things. One is, how do you manage to work intensely? I can work late, but not on a screen, like not on my laptop. So like having a tablet, like a Remarkable and so on, and just making sure you work in a way that is not going to kill your sleep. The second thing is, again, spending meaningful time with your close ones and having that love, I think, really helps. But also knowing the trade-off you make. I think one thing that makes people unhappy is because they didn't pick their trade-off. And so if you pick your trade-off of, I'm doing what I love, yes, I'm maybe deciding to spend more time with family, and in the next 5 to 10 years where I'm growing up my kids, I'm going to see less my friends. Yes, it's a trade-off. I'm going to, when I do it, I'm doing it in a very meaningful way, but it's decided. It's a decision. When it's a decision, it's very different. And I think you feel a lot better about it. And then I think it's loving everything you do, like being very passionate about it, but also understanding that like the downside is not that bad. Like the worst case, all my companies fail and everything, like, I'll start again. I'll do something new, and that's not going to be the end of the end of the world. Like we are tiny things, and when you see that you accept if you have health issues, but like I was interviewing a fantastic Zen master 2 days ago. He's one of the most famous Zen master in France, and this notion of impermanence and this notion of just like knowing how to define yourself and knowing that, yes, doing meaningful things and having an impact is really important, but it's fine if it's not, doesn't work out the way you want it, and which pushes you to take even more risk and to achieve even more greatness, I think helps take a lot more distance.
I love it. Jean-Charles, let's end big. If Alan could drop one truth bomb into the heads of every 25-year-old in Europe, what would it say besides go to bed earlier?
Yeah. Well, I would say stop complaining, especially if you're in Europe, stop complaining about the world around you and start joining adventures and missions that inspire you, or start building companies or NGOs or initiatives that have an impact. I think like we have a chance and we should have a methodological optimism towards the world, meaning that we can build a better tomorrow, but to build a better tomorrow, the only way is to build it. And individual initiative and the sum of individual initiative is what is going to build the better tomorrow. And so stop complaining, stop spending your time reading the news and being scared about what's happening in the world, and try just to have an impact around you and build a better world around you, I think is the thing I would push people to do, in fact.
I love that message. Jean-Charles, I have two more things I'd like to ask you. First is going to be, because I'm building kind of this personal library of advice that I can go to anytime I need an advice, because I don't want to ask people for an advice when I need it, actually, you know, because then it's like, okay, I'm already in need. I don't want to then like go to someone and reach out like, hey, so what would you do? If I don't know by myself, I would rather build this kind of library of advice. And like anytime I'm in need for like some solution, I would just have this, I would go and check it, and I would just find a solution there. So what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
It depends a lot on the context, so you have a lot of different advice, but...
For sure.
I would say... One of the things I read that I found really, really important... I think it was on the book on Warren Buffett, but I don't know what's come to mind, but why it's what's coming to mind today, but It's really finding your inner compass. Mm-hmm. And so stop behaving for what you think people want you to behave, but trying to make sure you find your direction that you think is the right one. When you do that, maybe a lot of people are going to tell you that you're doing stuff in a way that doesn't work and that is not conformist. We did a lot of innovation in terms of company culture at Alan, in terms of radical transparency and so on. But, and just if you have strong conviction and they are logically sound, like believe in them. Keep being open to the world and being challenged and review your assumption with new information, but don't try to fit. I think that's one of the things that was really helpful for me, at least, to make sure that I still understand. And combine that by not being a dick, pardon by the term, but still have a lot of empathy for others and for their own vision of the world. But I think building yours is really important.
Nice. I love it. Thanks, Jean-Charles. Final one. Might be the hardest one, or maybe not. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
I think it's super hard indeed, but I would say if I was to try to sum it up, I hope it's raising kids I'm proud of, in a world I am proud of. And if I do both, I think it's a success. Like if I manage to have kids that are happy and want to achieve things, and in a world where I've helped shape even a little bit the direction, especially on healthcare, but also on European sovereignty and so on, I think it would be a great life.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I love it. Thank you so much, Jean-Charles.
Thank you, Martin.
It's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show. I love the conversation. I think the audience will love it as well. Thanks so much, and I hope to see you soon in person.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much. It was a huge pleasure. I loved it.